Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The NFC Championship game. Just when you thought the NFC Championship game had enough plot lines, none other than CJ Anderson comes busting through the door to shake things up. Don't get it twisted. I do not see this the same way you clones do. That is not some Kool-Aid man joke.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. No, that's not me opening the door for hundreds of emails asking Alvy to unleash the achievement in obesity fat, sounder. Fat. I'm not going there. Listen carefully to what I'm about to say. This is a dead serious, dead straight take. CJ Anderson is the man. CJ Manderson is not a punchline. Dude is Sean McVay's not-so-secret weapon. And if the Rams are going to walk into NOLA, punch the Saints in the mouth, and walk out with a ticket to the ATL, CJ Anderson is going to be a big reason why. Listen, this dude himself will straight up tell you that he is not in ideal playing shape. Dude had shut down the cardio for the rest of the season when the Raiders broke him off. He'll tell you that. Hell, he's not just here for your fat back jokes. He's telling fat back jokes himself. Here is what CJ told ESPN, and I quote, "I call myself fat back. We'll keep that going as long as this season goes. I think it's comedy. We're entertainers. Look, I'm 12 or 13 pounds overweight. I'm not going to lie about that, but I'm not overweight to the point where I can't play the game. As long as I'm still moving and doing the things I need to do, I'm okay being fat back." This is incredible. Awesome. As you know, one of the only rules of this particular show is no self-glossing. You do not give yourself gloss. This show gives you gloss. We give you gloss. I don't care if your boys call you the zookeeper.
The zookeeper.
Or the axe.
Actually, Romy, I'm known as the axe.
Or the bowling ball.
Call me the bowling ball here in Tampa.
Or Manny Cheeseburger.
Manny Cheeseburger over here.
Or Horse Monkey.
Let's go with Horse Monkey.
Or Mole Doggy.
Mole Doggy in NorCal, East Bay to be exact.
Don't give a damn about any of that. You see, here you're just Mark in Sacramento. Here you're just John in Detroit. No self-glossing. Unless you play in the NFL and you call yourself the fatback. Then it's fine. Then it's awesome. Then I do have a reason, in fact, to break out Alvin's glorious obesity achievement announcement. Did I get fat?
Are you?
Is anybody not fat?
Fat.
You see, if a guy that good is going to call himself the fatback, then it's all right. And as far as CJ saying that he's okay, trust me, he's better than that. He's much better than that. Let's be real right here. The Rams offense was not moving like the Rams offense coming down the stretch. Injuries were piling up. Jared Goff was struggling. Todd Gurley dinged and not piling up the yardage and the TDs like earlier in the season. I interrupt this thought. Flight Deck, what's up, dude? The Flight Deck's in the house on a Friday. What's up, Flight Deck?
Omaha!
Fathead!
Fat!
I haven't said hey to the Flight Deck. It's always a good day when he's here. Anyway,
I'm out of my third Pro Bowl.
What I'm saying is the Rams offense was not looking like the Rams offense until the Fatback showed up.
Fat.
And after putting up 54 points and 454 yards in that win against the Chiefs, the Rams went for just 344 yards against Matt Pat's Lions D. Only 214 yards against the Bears in Soldier Field. Then they got punked at home by Nick Foles and the Eagles. However, then they brought CJ in. The offense immediately changed. 167 yards and a score against the Cards. 132 and another TD against the Niners. And just one when you wanted to accuse him of padding stats and piling up numbers against scrubs, my man goes out and absolutely puts it on the Cowboys. 23 carries, 123 yards, straight up shredded the Dallas defense. So the dude that Chunk Gruden signed and cut within a week, less than a month earlier, was getting the ball on fourth and goal from the one with Sean McVay looking to land that kill shot. And CJ was delivering it better than my man, John Wick.
Goff under center, turns left, gives to Anderson, and he puts it in the paint. Touchdown, LA! CJ Anderson powers through the left side.
Understand what that is, right? That's not just some fat guy and they had nothing better to do. That's not some gimmick. Listen, there was no chart that told Sean McVay to go for the throat. Hell, every chart on the planet said, kick the field goal, go up 11. You can call it brass, or you can call it the ultimate compliment. What he did was, he shoved that rock into CJ's gut, not Todd Gurley's. He gave it to the 5'8" dude pushing a deuce and a half, and CJ got that job done again. So, clown this guy if you want to, but nobody is asking him to put on joggers and go 26.2. They're asking him to hit it between the tackles, move the chains, and keep the ball out of Drew Brees' hands. Dude's already done that, like an absolute boss. And if LA is going to go into the Saints' house, if they're going to go into that house and win the George Halas Trophy, it's going to be because CJ is out front throwing haymakers. What I'm saying is, fat back coming. And Nola, better watch the hell out. Y'all are clowning the wrong dude. You're clowning the wrong dude. You're disrespecting the wrong dude. Because believe me, the Saints are showing this guy respect. That was such a great addition by Les Snead. And Sean McVay has used him perfectly. I'll say it again. Fat back coming.
Says he's fat.
Fat back coming.
And slow.
Fat.
I want to leave this Friday show with that. Because I don't want you to get this twisted. I don't want you misrepresenting or disrespecting this guy. They're not here without him. And if they get out of that place, it's going to be in large part because of him. Love that matchup. Devin Bush is my guest. Devin, it's great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
How you doing?
Good, man. Good. How about you?
I'm doing good. You know, living.
That's the truth, man. That is the answer right there. Listen, last month you made the announcement that you were going to enter the NFL draft. So kind of take us through the decision-making process. What was that like, and then how did it feel once you finally made that decision?
Yes, sir. Process was just, you know, it was a lot of thinking, you know, a lot of reflecting, a lot of life decision and grown man decision. You know, you have to announce that to your teammates. You got to announce that to your coaches, and you know, you announce that to your loved ones. So, you know, it's just a lot of thinking about, you know, making that next step, and you know, a lot of it goes into, you know, your life is about to change, and it affects a lot of people. So, you know, you really got to think about yourself, but at the same time, you got to think about how you can affect others with the decision. But you know, once I got closer to my decision, I got more confident in it. You know, once I you know, set in stone and released it, and I was, you know, entering the draft, and you know, I just felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. You know, I was free to, you know, go off and do things that I wanted to do to get ready for this draft.
Devin Bush joining us. All right, you know, I had Julian Love on the program from Notre Dame earlier this week, and he said that part of the reason for entering the draft this year was because he realized how many games he had already played in college. You talked about the fact that you had suffered an injury, and it helped you realize how fleeting the sport can be. What was it like to realize that, and then how much does that motivate you going forward?
Yeah, it was just a lot, you know, getting hurt in the Ohio State game, and, you know, I wasn't able to even walk for, like, weeks. So, you know, it just makes you think, like, man, could I go back and I can do this for a whole year? You know, who knows, I may hurt the hip again or anything else could happen. And, you know, you just work so hard for the sport and, you know, for the university. And, you know, once you get a chance at, you know, pursuing your dreams, man, you gotta take a leap of faith with that.
Friday's Daily Jungle is brought to you by Robinhood. Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everybody and not just the wealthy. Here's what I like best about it. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every single trade, but Robinhood does not charge commission fees. You can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Also, they're easy to understand charts and market data. You can place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. And the Robinhood web platform also lets you check out stock collections and analyst ratings of buy, hold, and sell for every single stock. And you can learn by doing. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with a personalized news feed. And there are custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. And on top of all that, Robinhood is giving you a free stock like Apple or Ford or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at jimrome.robinhood.com. That's jimrome.robinhood.com. Devin Bush, my guest. Now, listen, I don't need to tell you this. You know exactly how this process goes because your father played in the league. But as part of the process, you know folks will try to pick you apart, try to come up with any little flaw that they can find in your game. So how do you personally approach that? Do you ignore all of that? Or is that the kind of thing that maybe you can use as fuel and motivation?
Yeah, that's just something, you know, to pick up and laugh about, you know, joke around. Because, I mean, everybody has their own opinions, you know, everybody has something to say about you. And, you know, that just comes with the sport. That just comes with the type of person, you know, you are, the type of business you put yourself into. But, man, you don't take those things to heart. You know, the thing that really matters is how you feel about yourself and how your peers feel about you.
Devin Bush, my guest. You know, it's a great answer. Now, I would say this. One of the knocks in the past has been that you might not be the tallest guy in the field, but your D coordinator, Don Brown, said, quote, "I've had people say, well, you know, he's not 6'2", but he is the fastest, meanest guy on the field," end quote. So does that sound about right to you? And if so, how much pride do you take in the fact that you are the fastest, meanest guy on the field?
Yeah, that sounds 100% accurate. I mean, you know, I just take pride in my game, and I take pride in, you know, my preparation. And, you know, I go out there, and, you know, I play to win. And that's where it all starts from, man. I love to play the game, and I love to win.
Yeah, and there's a certain intensity that comes in the way you approach it and the way you play the game. I mean, is that coming from the love of the game? Where does the intensity come from? And the sport itself, what does football mean to you?
Football is my whole life. I've been around football, you know, since I was born, and you know, my father playing, my uncle playing, and my cousins playing. And, you know, I just always been around the game. So, I mean, it just comes from loving the game so much and being around it so long and putting so much into it. You know, I just love the game. You know, it just makes me who I am today.
Devin Bush getting ready for the draft. Now, your father was a safety at Florida State. Your father was a national champion. He was a first-round pick. He was a Super Bowl winner. The story goes that even when you were just 4, you knew what you wanted to do. You wanted to play football, but your dad said, you got to wait till you're 7. What did you like about the game, even at such a young age? Do you even remember back then what it was like? And just take me back. What was that time like?
I don't remember too much. All I know is I had a dad that on Sundays put on a uniform and put on a helmet, and I would go watch him play, you know, a game, and after, you know, he'll be my dad again. I thought everybody dad does that. You know, as I grew up, I come to find out, you know, not a lot of people get to do that. That's something special. So, I mean, from right then and there, I kind of knew what I wanted to do. And I think I fell in love with the game just by watching him play it. And it just looked so fun to me. And, you know, once he introduced me to it, you know, it was love at first sight.
You see, that's the thing. You said you fell in love with the game as love at first sight. And that's interesting because your dad said, you can play the game, but do not play the game because of me. You have to play the game only out of love. What did he mean by that? Why was that so important?
Yeah, I mean, if you play the game for somebody else, you know, you're not doing it for yourself. And this game is so hard, you know, it's so mentally tough and so physically tough that if you don't love it, you know, it's so easy to give it up, and it's so easy to walk away from it. So if you're going to play this game, you're going to play all into this game, it's because you love the game and that you want to do it.
All right, so a couple of things before you go. Your father also coached your high school team, and in 2015, you won the Class 8A state championship. The two of you kind of hugged it out at midfield after the game, and he told you he loved you, that he was proud of you, that you're a hell of a player. Again, this is a proud man. This is a tough man. This guy who had a great career. What did that moment mean to you? Do you ever think back on it?
Yeah, always, man. That was one of a very special moment, you know, in my lifetime. I'm never going to forget. You know, we've been on this journey together since, like you said, I was 3 years old. And, you know, to win a state title, you know, the first time in school history, you know, with my father being along my side, you know, that just meant everything to me. And, you know, I was getting ready to go to college anyway. So, I mean, it was almost like a leaving party for me. And, you know, for him to say that and be that proud of me, you know, meant everything to me.
Former Michigan linebacker Devin Bush getting ready for the draft. And then finally, you tweeted your announcement that you were going to enter the draft. And Derek Brooks responded, quote, "Let's go, nephew." Listen, there are a few people in that sport. In fact, Devin, I'd say there are a few people on this planet that I respect more than Derek Brooks. He was at that state championship game. He goes back a long way with your father. What's it like being around Derek?
Yeah, man, that's living legend, man. That's one of those guys you look up to and you're like, man, I hope I can do the same thing he did. And, you know, for him to be in my corner, for him to actually be my godfather, you know, I can always turn to him and anything I need, any advice I need, you know, I could turn to him and I'd get the best advice in the world.
It's a great resume. An All-American, a Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, Big Ten Linebacker of the Year, and he made the announcement he's coming out for the NFL Draft. Devin Bush, my guest. Devin, great to have you on. Good luck with that.
Thank you.
I will be looking for you once you get there. Clones, you just know that I'm going to get at you about my pals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. When it comes to safety, there is nothing more important than your vehicle's brakes. Trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the brakes that aren't exact fit for your car. Brands that you trust like Brake Best, Brake Best Select, and Wagner ThermoQuiet. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the brake parts and accessories you need at guaranteed low prices. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Trevor Price lobbing me a telephone call. Trev, what's going on?
What's going on, Jim? You know, every day I go on Twitter and everybody's like, when are y'all going to do more of these? That's my best part of my week. I was like, mine too. Talk to Jim.
That's it, man. I see the same thing, and I get hit with the same thing. So I'm glad I can run you down, Trevor. Listen, there's no way we go into championship weekend without checking in with you. And I'll tell you what I miss. They're saying they miss hearing you. What I miss most of all is Trevor Price story time. Man, give me something, Trevor, about either game. Give me a story. In fact, preferably, give me something about the Pats and Chiefs.
All right. Here's the absolute craziest thing I've heard all week. Talking about championship games, that the cold is coming, and it's going to be cold, and people are not supposed to be at the stadium, and they're not going to cheer, and the Chiefs fans are going to, take a step back, as loud as that place is. I'm telling you, Jim, I played in the AFC West. There is no further a lie than that. Trevor Price story time. It is 2000, I think, and 4. I'm one of the best defensive players in the NFL. We go to play the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know what the precursor to El Nino was, but that thing hit Kansas City like a ton of bricks. I have never felt cold. I went to the University of Michigan for 2 years. I have never felt cold to the point you got hot. That's how extreme the weather was. So we felt that as we went from the airport to the bus, the 15-feet walker to the bus, and everybody's in the bus looking around like, how are we going to play football in this? We get to Kansas City. We go into the stadium. In our locker room, there are no heaters. There is no heat in the locker room.
Wow.
How do you get dressed when it's minus 45 degrees in a locker room under the stadium? Okay, so I thought, hey, all right, we'll figure it out. We didn't warm up, Jim. I don't remember going outside. What I think what happened was, like, okay, guys, let's go warm up. And I was like, I'm not going out there. I'm just going to go play. I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out the best I can. We finally go outside, Jim. The entire ground is frozen, which is fine. You expect that. But the weather the night before told the entire city of Kansas City, do not go outside. It said, this is dangerous for your health. And I remember the weather lady was like, I'm not playing around with you. Do not go outside. You will die. Jim, there was not an empty seat in the stadium.
It's incredible. Trevor, what a great story. And I know exactly where you're going with this, because one of those wraps is the home field advantage to a certain extent is negated by the weather because it tamps down the crowd. So you tell me, if the weather person was on the air the night before saying, I'm not playing now, do not go outside, and there was not an empty seat in that stadium, what was the vibe like? How hostile was that environment? Did that crowd seem any less than what they normally would be?
So let me skip the two parts. So let me skip ahead. So I go to play for the Ravens in 2007, and we're going to go play the Chiefs in Arrowhead. And all the young guys have never been there. And I was like, look, Kansas City's crazy, and you're going to know it's loud when they sing the national anthem, and they say the home of the Braves, and the entire crowd yells Chiefs. And I was like, this is going to be nuts. We went to play them, and it really didn't happen because we were the Ravens and not the AFC West. Jim, it was minus 45 degrees. And when it said the home of the Chiefs, it sounded like a jumbo jet landed in the middle of the field. I was like, we're in a lot of trouble. I've never been intimidated in my life. That was the day I got scared, because we had to go out there and play football on a frozen field. And I mean the frozen tundra, and you don't want to talk about all the football stuff. No. This was, I'm tackling by taking my guy, the running back, and trying to lay him down softly on the ground, because I'm not touching the ground. I played the entire 60 minutes of a football game. I had no dirt on my uniform. Nobody showered. It was the most intense thing I've ever been through in my life. And I just remember pieces of it. I remember every game I've played in some respect. I just remember how cold it was. That's it. They're going to show up in droves, and the Kansas City Chiefs are going to drag the Patriots through the mud.
Trevor Price, story time. Now, the good thing is, it's not going to be as cold as they thought. It might be in the teens. It might be in the 20s. Trevor, break it down. Who do you like in that game and why?
Chiefs all day, just because the home field advantage is going to be so extreme. And at the 20s is like a beautiful day in South, like northern Florida. That's like Destin Beach to these people. I'm telling you, it is going to be a scene. It's going to be like being at a Beatles concert in 1962, whenever it is. It's going to be something else. And the team will drive energy from that. And it's hard playing in that environment as a visiting team, just because the energy in the stadium is so lopsided and it's so loud, and they do not stop screaming until you have left the parking lot in the bus. And you still hear it from the stadium, like, there's people still in the stadium? Yes, there are. I think the Chiefs won them over. And I'm not even talking about the football stuff. The football stuff, the Chiefs are a younger, faster team. Patriots deal well with fast teams. They dealt with Atlanta in the Super Bowl in the last half of the game. But as far as what's going to happen in the stadium and what the atmosphere is going to be like, even if the Patriots go out and score 14-0, the crowd is not going to stop, and they will get worse. It's going to be a thing.
Chiefs fans.
I think the Patriots take an L.
Chiefs fans. All right, so quote, the Patriots take an L. Chiefs fans, that is extremely high praise by a guy who won two rings, played 14 years in the NFL, and played games there. Trevor, that is literally one of my favorite stories that you have told to me, but I think my favorite part of that story was you got through the entire story without burping once like you did on our podcast. Remember?
You know, play some, you know, safe things, but at least the Texans let Deshaun. Ooh, excuse me. You got to do that again.
Or at least never do that ever again.
That's the best.
That is the best. That happened on the podcast. Oh, man.
You heard it. You smelled it. I was like, oh, my, what did I eat?
Yeah, no, dude, I heard it, but I didn't smell it.
No, you don't want no parts of that.
No, I want no part of that. Clones, you want to find Trevor on Twitter and thank him for a Trevor Price story time. Big man, I miss you. Great to have you back. Have a great weekend, and I appreciate the story.
Absolutely, man.
Talk soon, brother. Trevor Price, Freddie Kitchens. Freddie, it's great to have you on the show. Nice to have you. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing great, Coach. I'm doing great. So you were named head coach on Saturday. What was the first week of being an NFL head coach like for you?
I'll tell you, we spent the first week just trying to get our staff together, which is, I think, the most important part of being a head coach, especially for the first time, is surrounding yourself by good people, good coaches, and good teachers. So that's what we've been trying to do.
You know, I know you're looking for a good teacher because you've talked about it yourself, and I'll get to that in a minute. Look, I got to be honest. I'm not supposed to play favorites. They don't pay me to cheer or to pick favorites. But I've taken a liking to you because of a lot of things that you say. You said something that I thought was outstanding. You said, quote, Cleveland and I get along well. It's a great statement. What is it about you and that city that makes it such a good fit?
It's just simply, Jim, one of the things is, you know, I grew up down the street from a steel mill, and I saw the smokestack and the white smoke billowing out of it every day of my life, you know, growing up. And I almost moved to Akron. My dad worked for Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, and almost moved to Akron. One of those times he was laid off. And, you know, so just, I don't know, just the environment, the community here is just a lot like I grew up in, just hardworking people that are just trying to get better.
Freddie Kitchens joining us. I'm glad you mentioned your dad. You mentioned that he was a tire maker at Goodyear Tire and Rubber Plant in Gadsden, Alabama. You also referenced that Benjamin E. May said that those who start behind the game in life must run faster to catch up. And I feel like I've been running fast my whole life. I mentioned that again because, Freddie, a lot of people in your situation, it seems to me, might feel like they started behind and they can't catch up. You didn't just catch up. You ran by everybody. How do you explain it? Where did that motivation and that drive come from?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it has to do with chance, Jim, you know, and the opportunity and things like that. You never know when your opportunity is going to come. But under no circumstance did I ever want the opportunity to come the way it did. But, you know, you've got to make the most of any opportunity you get. And I tried to do that. But the kicker to that is you have to be ready and prepared for it when you get it because you don't ever know when it's going to come. You know, so that's the way it went.
You know, the kicker was, Freddie, that maybe it wasn't going to come. I mean, you referenced this also in the presser, but after your playing career at Alabama ended, you were in Tuscaloosa, you were selling cars, you were doing really well, making a lot of money, and then on top of that, you had a side hustle going on, you were washing FedEx trucks on the weekend, and you would listen to Alabama football on the radio to the point where it nearly brought you to tears. I mean, what were those days like, and when did you first make the decision, I'm doing fine, but I've got to be back in football. Football's a part of my life.
Well, really, it just came about. A guy by the name of Rick Trickett was the offensive line coach at Auburn, and Terry Bowden had just gotten fired. And I was sitting at home watching the news and saw where he got the job, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to give coaching a whirl. And I did. I loved it. And, you know, like I said the other day, it never was the fact I wanted to be a football coach. It's just I couldn't live without the game of football. It was just an empty feeling. You know, inside, you know, I think some players and coaches, when they retire, they have that feeling. It's not necessarily the game, it's the camaraderie you build and thing of the locker room is the essence of everything.
Freddie Kitchens, my guest, he's the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. So you start coaching at Division II Glenville State in Glenville, West Virginia. What were those days like?
Oh, still to this day, I don't know if I've had as much fun coaching in my life. You know, one red light in the county. A couple of restaurants, picked up rocks on the field before you started practice so no one got hurt. You know, it was the mecca of college football at the time for me. So it was great. Made a lot of great people. And again, worked for Rick Trickett, which I also followed LSU after that for Coach Saban.
All right, some other guys you mentioned also, Gene Stallings, Sylvester Croom, Woody McCorvey. These are the types of guys that showed you the game of football. They showed you that it's more than just the X's and O's. What did you learn from them about being a coach?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, this is a people business, Jim, and anybody that thinks anywhere any different, they're wrong. You know, you have to find what makes players tick. To do that, you've got to find what makes the person tick. And that's what, you know, I've always tried to do. You've got to build relationships. You got to earn trust and respect. Trust and respect is going to be the cornerstone of everything we do here. And to get that trust and respect now, you've got to be able to have tough communications with people at times and talk about topics that players and people don't want to talk about. And so to do those, that requires the trust. And you earn trust by getting to know the person, you know, and get to know the person, you've got to talk to them about more than just the power. You know, you got to talk to them about them and about their life and their families and what's important to them. Everybody's got something important to them. You got to figure out what it is.
Freddie Kitchens joining us, and this is why the word that keeps coming up when people describe you is authentic. So how important is that as a head coach? I mean, you play the game, so you know. How important is it as a head coach that your players know that you are authentic? You know, not that kind of bull crap where you pretend to be authentic, but you are authentic and the connection is real.
Well, I don't know what the – you know, Jim, honestly, I don't know what the big deal is about that. I thought that's what you were supposed to be as a person and as a coach and anything you do. I don't see the big deal in that. I didn't learn any other way other than to be authentic. And, you know, I don't know how to go about things any differently.
That's great. No extra credit for doing what you're supposed to do. No extra credit for being authentic. So
that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Freddie Kitchens, my guest. Now, the work that you and Baker Mayfield did was really amazing in the sense that it wasn't just amazing, it was unprecedented given that you took over midseason. How do you explain the fact that the two of you were able to get on the same page so quickly and be as productive as you were so quickly?
Well, again, I think it started with trust. You know, for someone to trust you, they have to know that you have their best interest in mind. And once they know that, then they know you're not going to BS them or anything from the standpoint of doing something that maybe affects you a little more than them. I mean, at the end of the day, the game of football, sometimes coaches forget that the game of football is played by the players. It's not by the coaches. So everything you do has to either, is going to impact the player either negatively or positively. And hopefully we're doing it more positively around here than anything else.
All right, so as one quarterback looking at another quarterback, when you look at Baker Mayfield, what do you see? What makes him so unique?
It's all the intangibles. You know, everything, you look at the kid, and he's not supposed to be as good as he is. And it's all the intangibles, and that's the things you can't judge. There's been plenty of guys that's come through the league and even in college, and you see them in high school ball all over the place that have tremendous talent. And the thing that separates those guys are the intangibles, the toughness, the competitiveness, the work ethic, all the little things that you can't judge by going to Indianapolis at the combine.
Freddie Kitchens, my guest for another moment or so. Freddie, I want to ask you about something that happened in 2013 when you were with the Cardinals, and one day you were feeling dizzy. The story goes that Carson Palmer and Drew Stanton called the trainers over, and you were taken to the ER. It was discovered that you had a tear in your aorta. What do you remember about that day and the impact it had on you and your family?
Well, I really remember everything about it. You know, it was just kind of a weird experience, you know, knowing that what could happen. But, you know, if you're laying in a situation like that, Jim, and you don't really – I know me personally, I don't think you ever – you're not thinking about the things you regret doing. You're more so thinking about the things that you regret not doing. And what I got out of that situation more than anything was how – I may have meant to other people. And, you know, ever since that day, you know, I don't think you want to go to bed at night or you know, you never know. You never know when the last time you're going to see someone is. So they need to know how you feel about them. And they need to know, you know, they're going to know you well enough you're having that conversation to begin with. So make sure they know how you feel about them.
Browns head coach Freddie Kitchens, my guest. So everybody got a chance to see what the Browns offense looked like under you. What is that entire Browns team going to look like under Freddie Kitchens? What do you want people to think of when they think of the Cleveland Browns going forward?
Well, hopefully we go out and play with a lot of passion and energy and toughness. Those are things that require no ability whatsoever. And then we'll try to take everybody's skill set, see what they do well, and do that. I thought that was part of coaching. But, you know, and that's all we did in the second half of the season was do those things. And, you know, it worked. But, again, it all goes back to the player. The player has to be willing to accept teaching, accept learning, accept work and stuff that it takes to put in just to get to the game on Sunday. And then you have to be able to perform. And everything always goes back to the player. We're just the mechanism of delivering the means to get it done.
He's coached in the NFL for the past 13 seasons, now gets an opportunity to be a head coach with the Cleveland Browns. My guest, Freddie Kitchens. Freddie, I know you get a lot of requests, a lot of media requests. I really appreciate you saying yes to this one. Great to have you on this show, and really nice to talk to you, Freddie.
Yes, sir. You too, Jim. Take care of yourself, buddy.
You too. Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. What's going on? Very good Monday show for you. We are front loading. Last week, I called my shot. Different Chargers, different year, different result.
Ah!
I was wrong.
My bad.
In fact, it could not have been more wrong.
Yeah! Touchdown, New England.
You know, everyone thinks we suck and can't win any games, so we'll see.
Is this thing on? Hello, is this thing on? Good. Let me start off by asking, tell me how my ass tastes.
Tell me how my ass tastes.
She's like, sir, you are first on the downgrade list. I said, wow, really? How lucky am I?
May I have your attention, please? Is there a Jim Rome on this flight?
Yeah, is everything all right?
Not for you, bro.
There is only one Sean McVay, and that dude just ran a freaking sledgehammer right through the middle of the Dallas Cowboys defense. Cameron Jordan joining me for a few more moments, showing up with a Lombardi, stacks and stacks of cash.
Stories are stories. I will confirm no validity of so said knowledge.
Let me just ask you, do you want that in 50s or 100s?
Dirt deposit.
Touchdown, LA! CJ Anderson!
Email.
I had to put that team on my back Saturday. You know how good the food is in NOLA? I wouldn't miss eating there for the world. Yours, Cheesecakey, Jambalaya, Anderson. John Morosi, Happy New Year, my friend.
Happy New Year to you, Jim. And by the way, how about Snoop Dogg calling the play-by-play of that hockey game for the Kings there? That was awesome.
Snoop Dogg in the house. Let me see some.
Send out for about 1,000 hamburgers.
The president of the United States standing behind a giant table of fast food. You know, like the same way law enforcement officials present drugs after a big bust. It finally looked like Mayor McCheese had caught the Hamburglar. Alex Anzalone joining me for a few more moments. CJ Anderson, he keeps coming up on this show.
It's not a fluke, and he's obviously solid running back. He's 5'8 or so, 230 something. I mean, that's hard to bring down.
Cleveland! Freddie Kitchens, if you need him.
I is not a word.
And I love what this guy's all about. He's all about the team. He's all about football.
We only have one goal here, and that's to host the Lombardi Trophy.
My man did not step up there and come off like a bug-eyed kook. Chip Lindsey is my guest. You grew up not far from Freddie Kitchens.
I actually played wideout when he was playing quarterback. Great guy. It's exciting him get his opportunity.
Good to have you, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Steve.
Hey.
Hey.
Two Canadian fitness freaks in a Sprout.
I have a new fat alarm. He says it's more like a fat announcement.
Fat and slow.
Fat.
When did you find time to compose that?
Right around the time Kelvin Benjamin got fat.
Have you been sitting on that, holding on that?
Sitting on it, waiting for my moment, and there it was.
I almost killed a guy in the Chick-fil-A line just now. Get the out of the way.
Tell me again, how many offers would this guy get in the open market?
He would have had 5 offers for head coaching.
Give me 3. Give me 1.
I know that.
How do you know that?
What do you mean?
How do you know that?
I know that. Email.
Can you do all of your interviews in hour 1? I would like to listen to all 3 hours, but I've got to bounce. Signed, Chris Hansen's checks.
I am Chris Hansen.
I want to meet you and fool around.
I can't control my horny level.
What? You don't know Patrick Mahomes? Patrick, a frog, both you be croaking out signals at Arrowhead, beating up on the cold and busting Brady's head.
You know what, Chiefs fan? Never mind. Don't call. Got another moment or so with Julian Love. He's getting ready for the NFL draft. What now is the mousetrap and what's the cheese?
You know, the cheese is focusing on endorsement and starting to have a little money in your pocket. That's a tough mousetrap for a lot of guys at this age. That's a big trap for a lot of guys.
And I saw a little white plane crash into the water. And then my dad said, "Baby, he was on the Rocky Mountain High."
Alvin, we're talking to TJ Dillashaw. You look like, quote, Pee Wee Herman.
Look at this, man. He's got a nice little fresh suit on.
That's right.
Oh, he's looking good.
Oh, hey, what are you going to do?
See you in 8 months. Put down the 4. Pick the iron back up. Season 8 is starting to shoot soon.
This one guy, Trench or something, or Shred. The other guy in Vancouver. Now, these guys are just rude. I don't get it.
Grandpa Trench.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Grandpa Pat.
And war. War, cribbage, war. Oh, I forgot the last.
We're talking to Paul Flannery.
If you talked to them last year, their leaders were Al Horford and Aaron Bates.
I took a look at Baines in the shower.
You guys are 3-point underdogs.
Shows you kind of what people would think about what our chances are.
It's just to me is whack.
That's
I don't know why a dynasty like that needs something like that to be motivated when you're 60 minutes away from another ring. Fat back coming. But I think my favorite part of that story was you got through the entire story without burping.
The Texans. Let Deshaun. Ooh, excuse me. You gotta do that.
That is the best.
You heard it, Melvin. I was like, oh my, what did I eat?
Who that? Said it gonna beat them Saints?
Tom Brady's last game. He can go home and make out with his kids forever.
Freddie Kitchens.
I thought that's what you were supposed to be as a person and as a coach and anything you do. Didn't learn any other way other than to be authentic.
No extra credit for being authentic.
That's amazing, isn't it?
But you never know when the act is going to take.
Scott in Wichita.
But you're stepping on hollow ground. The man who gave you life built that stadium from his... Uh-oh. From his...
We serve the... Bob Skirt Steak.
That was a dog.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
You don't matter.
Bush, Emily, clear.
Thanks for having me, Roman.
Dinkin' Dunker. Hello. Bro, that's not built in. That's not a part of the
truth. Laugh out loud.
Attack.
Hey-o.
Fat back.
Take care of yourself, buddy.
Good night now!
Bruce Feldman joins me. Bruce, Happy New Year. Good to have you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to be on with you, Jim.
It's good to have you, Bruce. So, I could talk to you about any number of things, but you've got this fascinating piece up right now on The Athletic about the Alabama coaching staff. And there's a reoccurring question in that piece, Bruce. And the question is, where's Dan? For those who do not know, who is Dan and who was looking for Dan when the question was being asked?
Dan is Dan Enos. And up till about a week ago, he was the expected offensive coordinator who was going to take over the Alabama offense for Mike Locksley, who had become the head coach at Maryland. Everybody in the program really liked Dan Enos. And then on Thursday night, I started hearing rumblings that Dan Enos was drawing some interest from Miami to be the Hurricanes offensive coordinator. And I remember thinking, well, he's not going to do that because if he stays at Alabama, he's got Tua Tagovailoa, who's the Heisman runner-up and a real special talent at quarterback, and all these great receivers who are sophomores and really, you know, 2 5-star running backs. I mean, this thing is poised to be another really explosive offense. He's there one more year, and he probably have his own Power 5 head coaching opportunities. And then the next morning, he bolts. And not only that, when there's a morning staff meeting, Nick Saban is like, hey, where's Dan? Where's Dan? Where the bleep is Dan, eventually it got to. So they were supposed to interview offensive line candidates for that coaching vacancy on the staff. There was already a bunch of other staff turnover that was going on, and that move blindsided Nick Saban. And, you know, as one of the guys on staff had put it to me, it was like, basically it was like the Colts, meaning kind of disappeared in the middle of the night. And I think that did not set well with a program, honestly, that has had quite a bit of turnover and probably will have a little more on the coaching staff before things are all said and done this winter.
You mean Nick had a problem with that? Why? And Bruce Feldman joining us. This is an amazing story. All right, so a number of the people, Bruce, on that staff knew where Dan was, but nobody wanted to tell Saban. So one of them goes into Dan's office. What did they find in his office? And at that point, where was Dan?
Nothing but a pencil. And then they went to check, well, let me see if he's in, moved into the new Mike Locksley office to replace his old offensive coordinator. And that was empty too. So, you know, he was on his way to take over at Miami. And he was announced as the new Miami offensive coordinator that same morning. So it was quite the curveball. And the people who needed to know who had been in communication with him late Thursday night did not hear anything about that he was leaving for Miami. So that, you know, what's interesting, Jim, is Nick Saban loses coaches at a rate that no other, you know, successful superpower program has. You know, when Pete Carroll lost guys at USC, the thing started to backslide. When Urban Meyer lost Dan Mullen and Charlie Strong at Florida, that thing crumbled. When Bobby Bowden lost his top guys, that thing went off. Nick Saban, they come and go, and he replaces them seamlessly. And the way they usually go is falls into three categories. The first is the guys get promoted up into head coaching jobs, whether it's Kirby Smart or Mike Locksley or Jim McElwain, Lane Kiffin. That happens. Then there's another layer, which is fairly unique to Alabama, which the guys kind of get forced out or pushed or nudged out. Maybe they're not quite the right fit. Maybe they're good coaches, but, you know, he wants to go in a different direction. He's connected enough to help them land and get a soft landing someplace else. This third category where Dan Enos fits in, and maybe there's a few more that fit in there. There's kind of it's a little bit vague between who fits in the second category and who fits in the third category, are the guys who go, man, this is such a grind working in this situation. I'm not sure this is best for me and how long I can take it or want to deal with it. And so the story that I did on The Athletic yesterday really gets into, from talking to former coaches who worked there, what that dynamic is like, how demanding it is, and also why it works and why Nick Saban is still able to keep winning in spite of a staggering amount of turnover on his staff.
Bruce Feldman joining us. Well said, Bruce. There's a lot to unpack there, but let me ask you this. You use the phrase ass chewings, which is something that fans are very familiar with from watching Saban lash out at assistants during the games. Is it just an in-game thing, or is that something that happens when the cameras are not rolling?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that was what I asked a couple of the guys who used to work there. And one of them specifically said, you can live with that. That's a couple of times a year. It's in the emotion of the game. It's the stuff that is the day-to-day that wears them out.
or wear some of them out. And what this person meant was, if you're there for a little while, you realize it's almost like it's scheduled that on the third day of training camp, he's going to go off, or on September 7th, he's going to go off. And this person said, it's like it's in his notes. I need to do this, because that he feels like is effective to manage the staff and manage the program. And so maybe it's his way to combat complacency. And the thing is, with Nick Saban, and guys agree with this, who've been there, and even though it may wear on them and gut them to some degree, is they look at it and go, you know what? The guy's won 5 national titles at Alabama. He is the best college football coach of all time, doing it at a level where all these complexities are out there. And so there is a quote-unquote method to the madness, but it is tough and it is demanding, and it is clearly not for everybody to work for. And they feel like sometimes you talk to guys, and one of the guys told me, you feel like you're going to have a short shelf life when you go there. You may not be there for very long, but you try to get the best out of it and develop, and hopefully you'll win some championships and make a bunch of money in the process.
Bruce Feldman joining us. So let me ask you this. If the guys who are there think that maybe it's like scheduled almost to a certain extent, I mean, when you take a step back, Bruce, it kind of feels that way, right? I feel like there's a scheduled rant about the fans leaving games early, or there's a scheduled rant about something media related at the same time every single year. If that's the case, does that mean that it's all an act and it's not authentic?
That's a great question, and I don't know. I think that's partly true. He knows what he is doing and how he is, I don't want to say, you know, puppeteering the coaching staff and everybody around him. I mean, you know, and this goes into the story a little bit about, there are guys on his staff, Scott Cochran, the strength coach, Jeff Allen, the director of sports medicine, who are the guys who are part of his process. And it's almost like they are good cops. Saban becomes the bad cop. And in truth, the assistant coaches deal with Saban more than they deal with those guys. And the players deal with more the support guys, strength coach, sports medicine guy, than they probably deal with Saban across the board. And so it is this balance that he has figured out. And again, I think there's certain things that he reacts to. I mean, I don't think he looks in a game and just says, okay, this is going to blow up and I'm going to react this way. I do think there's a lot of volatility that's genuine. But I think when it comes to how he is controlling things and how he is trying to keep an edge and keep the program from being complacent, and that is something other coaches outside the program are always fascinated by. How is he able to do it? And I think there is a very calculated way that goes into it, you know, as explained in the story.
Bruce Feldman joining us. It's a fascinating story. You know, Bruce, I had Freddie Kitchens on, and we were talking about, you know, people keep saying how authentic he is. I thought it was great because his reaction was something along the lines of, I don't know what the big deal is. Isn't this the way you're supposed to be? Which to me was great, because what's more authentic than somebody saying, what's so great about being authentic? But then at the same time, you have a former assistant telling you that Saban, quote, lacks a real personal relationship with the people he works with. It just feels like a business relationship, end of quote. What was your reaction when you heard that?
You know, I'm not shocked. I mean, one of the things that I heard from a different former Alabama coach was, you have a better relationship after you leave than you do when you're there. And I just think there is so much focus for him in the moment and on what's going to get us ready for the next thing, that a lot of those other things and those nuanced things, I don't want to say they're not on his radar, but I think he has figured out what works for him. And I think he's made a lot of decisions, and he's wired differently than a lot of these guys. You know, like what Freddie Kitchens told you and what a lot of other coaches, you know, feel, I think those things are genuine, and I think it sounds great to be that way. But for Nick Saban, the way he's wired, it's worked out incredibly well. And I think, you know, whether he's made these decisions and said, all right, I would like to be the other way, but I know that this is the best for my career and how I want to do this. I mean, that's just, you know, I hate to say it, like, as cold and as blunt as this, but, like, you know, you can't, it's hard to find fault. I mean, you can say, I don't like it. You can say there's things that are maybe you find distasteful and maybe not hit the right notes, but the guy's the greatest coach that we've seen in college football. I mean, it's right now, it's not even close, and this is the way he does it. And It's not to say the other ways are wrong. I mean, it's refreshing to hear some of that stuff, but this is the best way for him, and he's not going to change it. And I don't think anybody who is an Alabama person wants him to change, because if he does, you're probably not getting the same success he's had.
You're right. The process works for him. All right, so to your key point, Bruce, what about this notion of turnover? It's hurt so many other programs. Up until now, it has not hurt him, but has something changed? And in your opinion, has all of that turnover finally caught up to Nick and his program?
I don't think it has. Now, look, the two things that are most different is this is more change than he's ever had. This past offseason, 6 new assistant coaches came in. In my reporting, I think it may be as many as 7 new assistants may end up there this year.
Wow.
So that's 13 in a basically a full calendar year. And on top of that, they're coming off the worst beatdown they've ever had since he's been the head coach there. But having said all that, this team is loaded with talent in 2019. That offense should be really, really explosive. And I think that, you know, he's still got a really good bunch of talent in the pipeline defensively. I mean, he's still recruiting at an incredibly high level. And he's there. And the Scott Cochran-Jeff Allen combination is there. There's a lot of pieces that are in place. It doesn't mean that the assistant coaches don't matter, because they do. But I think as long as Saban's there, and as long as his inner circle is there, and as long as he's recruiting five-star after five-star, I don't think they're falling off. I mean, Clemson's going to make a run at him because of what Dabo's doing there. I mean, it's going to be 1 and 1A, but I think everybody else, I don't see anybody in the SEC that's ready to overtake Nick Saban. There are good teams there. They're recruiting well, but I just don't see it right now. I mean, we may be seeing a lot more at Clemson, Alabama, and I don't think it's going to be as much of a blowout next time.
And then, Bruce, finally, you mentioned the beatdown. What is your sense as to how Saban has taken this and how he's responding to a 28-point loss to Clemson? What do you think that he thinks about that loss?
I think it's head-scratching, but I think, you know, one of the things that was lost in all this and people talking about how great they were in the run-up to this was they had 3 returning starters on defense going into the year, and they lost their top 6 defensive backs. They were more vulnerable than I think we in the media who cover the sport probably realized, and Oklahoma wasn't able to take as much advantage of it as they could have. Oklahoma's defense was so bad that I think Alabama could have done what it wanted to on offense and controlled that game. But when they went up against somebody who is just as talented, and it was Clemson's night, but I think for Nick Saban, I think, you know, we've seen Urban Meyer's teams get blown out. You know, we saw it with Purdue. We certainly saw it with Clemson. We've seen it happen. We hadn't seen this from Nick Saban. So I think he's figuring out, okay, where were the parts where we were not ready? Where were the decisions in game where we were not ready? And all those things, I think he's factored in. I mean, the talent's there. It's just that they just were not as prepared as Clemson was. And I think that's the stuff that, you know, look, he's adding Steve Sarkisian to be his offensive coordinator. It's a guy he knows and has worked with. I think there's a lot of stuff that he's going to look at on the defensive side of the ball as he's going to rebuild that and say, okay, here are the adjustments we need to make, not just in game, but to get ready for these games, because you know, maybe there was a level of complacency because they're in uncharted waters now, and I think that's stuff that he's going to be stewing on for a while.
It's a fascinating read. It's up on The Athletic right now. Bruce Feldman also is a reporter for Fox Sports and FS1 and a New York Times bestselling author as well. Extremely well done, Bruce. Great to have you back. Thanks for the conversation. Great read.
Thanks, Jim. Always good to be on with you.
Good night now!